Welcome to another episode of the Decent Rowing Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about race strategy or tactics that you'd use while racing, a few different points on different age groups as well, different levels, and certain strategies that we've found can be very effective when trying to do well in racing. So where would you probably start when you're thinking about this topic, Ken?
Well, I think the fundamental is to work out what bracket of racing you're talking about, because if it's an elite level racing, then there's a different set of circumstances compared to school racing, for example, in the junior categories. And so the first thing to understand is what actually works and why it works. If you think about it from a theoretical perspective, then arguably the best thing to do is to go out reasonably fast, use up your free energy source, which is quite brief, and then settle into the race, and ideally you'd say maintain a constant speed right the way through to the finish. Now, in practice, that doesn't really work, but the thing to understand is that changing a boat speed, particularly making a boat faster for a short period of time, is quite expensive on energy, because you've actually got to use energy to get that change in boat speed, and it's better, if you can, to maintain a boat speed and not have to change it a lot during the race. But that forgets about all sorts of aspects. For example, the psychological aspect of racing is that sometimes you can get a better position by doing something to surprise other crews. In an elite level, that's harder to do. But if you were able to pick a race, a speed, and sit at it right the way through to the finish, then you've got to know what your speed is really well in order to be able to get the maximum speed or the fastest time for that particular course. So it varies a lot from different categories. So I suggest maybe let's start with the elite level and see how we can make that, what race strategies we can come up with. Just a story, anecdote, when I was coaching at the World Championships under 19 some years back, the quad that I was coaching made the B final. They didn't get into the A final, and the reason was that when they were racing in the previous race in the semi, then they were a length and a quarter in front of the crew, the next crew behind them, so they felt that they were barely in a safe position, so therefore they were going to get through to the final. What actually happened is that the crew that was behind them put on a burst and beat them by about 2 centimetres, and so the issue of accepting where you are and thinking you've done enough work to win a race, I think, is a bit of a fallacy that happens even at elite rowing level. So, Lachlan, from your perspective, I know you've been in some races where it's been pretty tight at the finish, and how do you see the strategy of how far in front is far enough to be in front?
Far enough to win, probably. I don't know, maybe 50 metres, something like that, as long as there's nothing major that goes wrong. I've been one of the state championships races I was in. It was the Coxless Quad, and we were up against another crew that was basically our rival crew, our rivalry crew that we'd been facing each regatta trying to beat, and we knew it was going to be pretty close. We ended up getting out to a pretty good lead, so maybe, I don't know, half a boat length, close to a boat length by 1750 metres, so 250 to go, and we're probably maybe 5 strokes before the finish line, and our stroke man caught a crab, like a massive crab. He lost his oar, so he wasn't rowing anymore, and we only ended up beating this other crew by, you know, 10 centimetres, something like that. It was ultra close. And so it's one of those, you know, anecdotes where it's important to keep producing good boat speed all the way to the finish line, because something can go wrong. And, you know, this was an elite crew. This guy had rowed at a national level. It wasn't just, you know, someone who doesn't know how to row. It was kind of rough conditions at the end of the day. And, you know, we only just got over the line, luckily. But it's something that you can't get too complacent with. It's best to try and maintain a good level of boat speed to the finish.
Yeah, and on the other side of that too, if you think about the crew that came second, it's possible that they eased off a little bit as they were getting towards the end, because they thought they wouldn't catch up. And so if they did ease off a little bit and they'd not done that, then they would have had a better chance of winning. So it applies to both the crew in front and the crew behind. Never really assume that what you think's going to happen is actually going to happen, because rowing is a pretty fickle sport, and quite often it doesn't end up being the case. The other area that I see a lot, if we go to the other end of the scale of experience, just for a contrast, if you're racing at school level, then often at school level you can actually do things that will get you into a better position, even though they're a little bit expensive on energy because they require changing the boat speed quickly. So you've all seen races, I'm sure, particularly in the non-elite level and sometimes at the elite level, where a crew can go from well down and to finish simply by putting on a massive burst. Most commonly we see that at the finish line. So I remember coaching a crew at the head of the river, and at the 1750 mark we were about a length behind and we won by a canvas. And what they did, though, that crew, they took the rating from about 34 up to 42 and luckily did it well and just went straight through the field. Now, that's high on energy to do that. You can, and that's where we mostly see people putting a burst on towards the finish. But sometimes you can actually do something earlier in the race that's quite significant. That same crew, we were racing at national championships, and in the particular race we were in, I think it was a heat or something, but you know, we were racing and the crew next to us was in front. They were just quietly getting a little bit further away every stroke. And what the crew did is they put a serious burst on for 10 strokes. Like, just really took it out for 10 strokes. Took the rating up, took the power up, really gave it a go, and they got a length in extra distance out of that, and they got in front of the crew that was next to them. And what the crew actually did, I asked them afterwards, because they didn't catch up again after that. And the rationale was, well, when the crew went past them fast like that and then just sat in front of them, they realised that they weren't going to win. And so they decided to stop fighting, which was just as well, because I reckon they would have got us if they'd had a go. So you can, it's not so much tricking people, but it's really about demoralising the people in the boats around you at particular strategic times in the race when it has most effect. And sometimes you'll find that the other crew will then decide that you're going to beat them anyway, and so they opt for second place. So that trick works quite well. Have you had experience with that in doing that type of event, Lachlan?
Yeah, so especially at an elite level, if you go out too hard off the start line, say you get out to a lead at the 500, something like that, and you're racing against one more experienced athletes and two fitter athletes who know that they can maintain their boat speed all the way to the finish where you might not be able to, you'll just get destroyed every time. Like, they'll just row through you, you'll blow up, you'll be out of energy, stuff like that. So it's something that doesn't really work at an elite level, because the rowers that you're racing against typically have that experience, they have that engine, and unless you are superior in fitness to them and technique, but mostly fitness, you won't be able to beat them. But typically in the more beginner areas, the more novice rowers, it's usually the person who's leading at the 250 meter mark that will be leading at the 2K mark. It's very rare that you'll see a large changing of the field. So if a certain crew goes through the 500 meter mark first, there's a good chance they're probably going to continue increasing their lead. Part of that is the boat speed that they're able to generate, but part of it's also a sense of relaxation that rowers get when they're in front. It's quite stressful if you know that someone's in front of you. You can't see them. Obviously, you're facing the wrong direction, whereas if you're out the front of a race, you can see your opponents. You can see if they're making any moves, and you can either counter that, or what normally happens is you just become more relaxed. You get better rhythm than they do, and therefore you move the boat in a more effective way than they are. So, yeah, at a lower level, you definitely can benefit by going out harder, maintaining it as long as possible, and hopefully building a lead whereby you'll be able to hit that relaxation mark. The other crews will start stressing out. They'll start making more mistakes, and you'll likely increase your lead.
Yeah. Another thing that happens too in a race, particularly at the junior level, the crews tend to do particular hard pushes at certain points. For example, they might at the 500 meter mark, it's unlikely they'd do a push. At the 1,000 meter mark, it's quite common for those crews to do a particular push at the 1,000 meter mark. So I'd suggest think about that and see what the other crews are doing, because you'll find you can often get a better advantage by going a little bit earlier. So instead of going at the 1,000 meter mark, go at the 900 meter mark so that you've got the jump on them a little bit. Also, when you're doing this in a crew boat, I'd strongly suggest that you don't let everyone else know what you're about to do. So if you're in an eight racing down a course, then I think it's very disadvantageous for the coxswain in your boat to say, righto, in three we're going to take it up, because you've just told everybody what you're going to do. And sometimes the other boats near you will hear that and then they can adjust accordingly. It's much better if you're going to do that sort of a push, is to do it on some signal that no one else would understand. A word, for example, a phrase that the coxswain can call out, just a piece of code essentially, so that you can get your push underway without alerting everyone else. So the only way they know you've got a push underway is because you start to move away from them or start to catch up to them. So just a little thing like that can actually make quite a bit of difference at a school racing level. The other thing that's important too, and I think this is important at any level, elite right the way through down to the under 13 beginners, is that if you're going to put a burst of power on during a race, then it's important to do a couple of things, keep a couple of things in mind. First one is that it's better to do it before you lose touch with the other boat. So, for example, if you're in the crew that's behind and the boat in front of you is within your space, i.e. their stern is inside your bow, so they're not that far in front, they're less than a length in front, then it's easier to do a push then and be effective than it is if they're two lengths in front. Because if they're two lengths in front, then they're hard to see. And so that's makes a fair difference from as to how effective you can be, because it feels a lot better if you're still in touch with the other boat. The other thing to do, which I think is super critical, super important, is to make sure that before you do a push, you get your technique right first. And so if, for example, you're focusing on getting really quick, deep, well-connected catches, not driving before the blade's connected, those sorts of drills that we talk about a lot on the website, then it's important to get that catch right before the push. So if you're going to do a push, then three strokes before the push, or maybe two, is to really focus on getting the catch right, getting it well connected, making sure that you're not pushing before you're connected, getting that bit right, and then do the push. If you just do the push and without focusing on the technique angle of it, in a lot of particularly junior crews, but it applies at elite level as well, is that you can do a push, and if you do it without getting your technique right first, then you're not going to get as much effect out of that as if you get your technique right first. So, Lachlan, during a race, how do you see the concept of trying to keep in touch with boats and trying to, if you're trying to catch up to them?
Well, I think once you're in a race and say you're losing it, basically you're towards the back of the field or at the back, I don't think there's an awful lot that can be done. Like a lot of the times when you're racing someone like that, you will just have been outmatched. Basically, they're the better rower or the better crews that you're against, and there's probably not a lot you can do from there. When it comes to racing, although we've been talking about like different tactics and things like that, I'm a firm believer that, you know, rowing is essentially, you're not really competing directly with the other people that you're rowing against in the race. You're mostly competing against yourself to get the most out of yourself and your boat and set the best time that you possibly can. A lot of the time, you know, some of the time you'll beat other people, some of the time you won't. It'll be a function of your fitness, your ability to move the boat and things like that. So I reckon for me, if I was trying to teach a crew how to get the most out of themselves to get the best time they can and therefore hopefully win the race, I'd say it's really important at the start to spend those first 10 strokes or 10 or 15 strokes, getting the boat up to speed. So the quicker you can get that boat up to speed, the better, essentially, because basically you get your boat up to the speed that you're going to be racing at, and then you want to start tapping it along. And the main difference between beginners and elites is the beginners get the boats up to speed quite well. The elites get the boat up to speed quite well, but then there's a quick, sharp drop-off with the beginners as either their fitness can't maintain that boat speed or their technique isn't suitable and they can't maintain that boat speed, whereas the elites will keep the higher boat speed all the way through the 250, 500, 1,000, all the way to the finish. So basically trying to get the boat up to the speed that you'll be racing at is very important, and then doing what you can just to maintain that with the technique. And it's got to be calm. It can't be rushed. And, you know, if there's a crew that's pulling ahead of you, either they're a better crew than you, you're not going to beat them, or you have to then bring it back to yourself and your crew to try and get the most out of what you're going to do. And maybe you'll beat them, maybe you won't, but it's not something that you can really will yourself into if you haven't got the fitness, haven't got the technique, haven't got the experience. So I think a lot of the time in racing, we see the people with the best technique, the best fitness, and the most experience winning the races. And that's really because they know how to move their boat as fast as they can for themselves. And they're not moving other people's boats. They can't really change what they're doing except for getting in their heads, which is, I'd almost liken it to like a junk food of racing. Like it might feel good in the moment, but you're probably mortgaging what you can get out of your entire race. And if you put yourself too far into the red, sometimes there's no coming back. Maybe if you've had five or six races in a weekend, you just blow up on that fifth or sixth race. You won't be able to contribute to the boat, and you won't really be moving that boat towards a winning position at the finish line.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing in that concept of how do you get a boat so that it's running well once you get out of the start. So if you have a good start out of the blocks, got to the 500 meter mark, sitting in a reasonably good position, then that transition to be able to maintain good boat speed, good boat run without using too much energy, that's a real skill. And a way to develop that skill with athletes is to practice their understanding and so of what a good rating is. You'll find sometimes you're out in a boat and you might think that the rating's really high and it's actually low, or you might think the rating's low and it's really high. The critical step really is that if you're racing along and you don't look at the stroke coach first, try and work out what the rating is. And so if you think that the rating's, say 33, and you look at the stroke coach and it says it's actually 30, then that's not usually a good thing. If, on the other hand, you think the rating's about 30 and you look at the stroke coach and it's actually 33, then that probably means you've got some good rhythm happening in that boat. Now, when they understand and can identify rhythm and know that they've got good rhythm, then if they get to a rating where the rhythm disappears, which almost invariably happens for pretty much every athlete, and you'll feel that it's not doing as well as it should, then what the crew should do, instead of persevering with this uncomfortable rating that's not working for them, is to take the rating down a couple of points. So if you're doing 34 and it feels like it's rushed and it's uncomfortable and the rhythm's not there, then take it down to 32, take it down to 30, get the rhythm back, get the crew together, and then take it back up again. If you try and fix that rhythm at that rate, then you'll find generally it's harder to do than if you let the rating come back a little bit, get yourself composed, get yourself together, get the boat running well, get the rhythm right, get yourself a bit more relaxed, because that's really important, and then take the rating back up again. So Lachlan, from a how do you take the rating up perspective, do you have any particular ways that you would do that if you wanted to take the rating up during a race, particularly in a crew boat?
Yeah, definitely. So the only real way that I've ever had success in taking the rating up while racing is through the drive phase. You don't want to be getting that extra rating down the slide, or like with the hands away, rock over. you know, that'll sort of come naturally. But you really, if you want to increase the boat speed, you really have to increase the power of the drive. So, like, for example, the crew might say, you know, we're going to take the rating up, like, and 10 on the legs, something like that. So the whole crew knows that we're going to take the rating up, but it's not down the slide where we're not really moving the boat at all. It's when the blade's in the water and you're putting the power on. So that'll, one, give you an instant increase in boat speed, and two, because you're going, the boat's going a bit faster, it'll make it easier to get that rating up. You don't want to be looking for that rating down the slide, because what usually happens if you rush down the slide, often the placement of the blade, the connection at the catch, just isn't there. Whereas if you think about increasing the rating after you put the blade in the water, then you're pretty much guaranteed to make that boat go faster.
Undoubtedly. And I think it's really important. And rhythm and relaxation is another aspect where if you want to have a boat to go well, then you have to be relaxed. And you have to be relaxed while you're racing, which sounds almost like an impossibility. But it's really about making sure that you've got the right muscles turned on. If the boat's a little bit unstable, don't get tense about it. Just work with it and get the relaxation back, get the boat back to a comfortable running position. A tense boat is going to be highly unlikely to win a lot of races, because tension in the boat takes away from everything. It's hard to do fine motor movement, so it's hard to have really good precise placement of the blade if you're really tense. If you're tense, then usually your shoulders are tense, and then you start to engage different parts of the body at different times, and so you don't get optimal speed. The crews that you see winning are the ones that are rating lower usually than the other crews in the race, and they're faster. And it's not always because they're stronger. It's not always because they're fitter. It's sometimes because they're just not annoying the boat. Their technique's good. They make sure they don't check the boat each stroke. They get the blade in well connected. And more importantly, when they finish, or equally importantly, when they finish the stroke off, they relax and let the boat run, let it go. And you'll find that often you'll get a faster speed out of a boat at a lower rating, in fact, than you will at a higher rating, and get a lot more energy. Have you been in cruise, Lachlan, where they wanted to take the rating up to some unsustainable level and just exhausted everybody and the boat didn't run?
Yeah. I mean, it's not the rating that's necessarily unsustainable. It's what the boat can do. So, you know, you can go down a rowing course in an eight. We did, you know, a few years back to win the state championship at 40/42, close to 42 strokes a minute. And that, you know, it's quite high, right? But it didn't feel high in that boat. And I think that's because we were getting our catches in, we were getting well connected, and there was a lot of power during the dry phase, like well timed. The crew had done a lot of rowing together. We'd had a lot of practice racing, and we were sort of, you know, we were clicked in. We knew what we had to do. We knew how to do it, and it was relatively easy. But I've never raced a singles race anywhere near 42. I think, you know, maybe the highest I'd race in my single at a push would maybe be 34. I know some people row singles at higher rates than that, but they're mostly a lot fitter than I am, and can maintain that. So it's not necessarily linked to a desire to take the rating up and the boat not being able to handle it. It's more, is the crew together enough? Have they got enough power? Is their timing right? Is the boat moving quickly enough? And if one of those things isn't quite right, you're going to have a very hard time maintaining a high rating for any more than about, you know, 15 or 20 strokes.
Yeah, definitely the case. And just a couple of things I'd like to mention as well before we finish is that two things. First one, during a race, if you happen to be in a coxed boat, particularly a stern coxed boat like an eight, then the coxswain can make an enormous difference to how well a crew goes. If the coxswain understands the feel of the boat, understands how the boat's moving, and understands if the rhythm's not there from that feeling, if they understand by putting their knees against the gunwales, they'll be able to feel if there's timing issues in the boat. The coxswain can make very significant changes during a race to make a boat go fast. I think it's it's an underutilized resource a lot. The coxswain can be really significant in making boats go fast. So during a race, I think it's important that make sure that they really understand. They're essentially the coach in the boat during the race, and they can have a serious impact on how well the boat performs. Not just by seeing where the other crews are, it's about feeling what the boat's doing and then making changes. And the last thing I'd like to mention is the start. Now, a couple of things with the start. In order to get the boat going quickly as fast as you can, it's important to get really well connected at the start. And so often I see crews that when they're starting out at the start of the race, they're moving a lot of water. Their blades aren't very deep in the water, and they're just essentially pushing water around rather than pushing the boat. And if they get themselves well connected, particularly for the second, third, fourth strokes in a bigger boat, you can do it a little earlier. Now, but it's hard to have the blade well buried if you're just sitting on a start line, particularly in a single. But the concept is to make sure that those second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth strokes, that you've got the blade super connected, really well connected. And that way you'll get the increase in boat speed quicker than if you're having these washy puddles that's just moving water. So once you've got the start done, particularly at a junior level again, if you win the start and you've got a decent length on the other crews, then quite often you'll find that it's hard for them to catch up. As Lachlan said, particularly in the junior levels, the person that's in front at the 500-metre mark is usually the person who wins the race. And so in the junior levels, I focus particularly on starts, make sure that they can do them at the right rate, they've got the blades well connected, they get the boat moving super quick, because from an emotional perspective, it makes a significant difference if you win the start. Suddenly everything seems easier. And I was taking back a long way, Lachlan, but do you remember at school how effective the start would be if you had a bad start or a good start, what impact it had on the race?
Oh, I don't know about school. You know, if we've had a good start, we probably won, and if we had a bad start, we probably lost. But that's exactly the same as it is, you know, racing a single against people. I've always had a pretty good start, and I think it's ultra important. Like, sometimes I'm racing against someone and I'll take the first three strokes in the time it will take them to do two. Or, you know, I'll have my 10 strokes done at the start while they're only up to their six or something like that. And I'm already a boat length ahead. And so, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. But, you know, when I'm racing against people, I know that their top speed is very similar to my top speed. And sometimes the difference is getting that little advantage off the start. You get a bit of extra, say you get a length on them early, that's good. Not only does it mean you've got your boat up to speed more quickly, you've also got that little buffer so you can see if they're making a move. They don't really know where you are except for that you're beating them. So that stresses them out, and it makes quite a big difference. You got to be careful not to take it too far. I've taken it too far in races where I've tried to be too competitive, especially in that first 250. So we're really just talking about getting the boat up to the speed that you want to sustain it at. And as you get fitter, you'd be able to sustain, you know, a faster speed than you'll be able to average during the race. You don't want to do that because you'll blow up more. You won't be able to maintain it. But it's especially important to get up to speed as the first thing, and maintain it secondly. Another thing that I see quite a few rowers do, which I think they shouldn't do, is at the start line where we are, where we start. We've got boat holders that hold the end of our boats. They line us up nicely, and we haven't got. There's a light and a sound which say when to start the race, and so it goes from red to green, and there's a sound that they say, you know, quick start, attention, row, and then we go, right? But if I was just to listen, like keep looking straight ahead and not at the lights, there's quite a delay if you're in the outside lanes before you hear that sound, because light travels far faster than sound. So always, always look at the lights to see when they change, because you'll get half a second jump on people before they process the sound of, you know, someone saying row. You'll see it with your eyes. You'll be out and away. You'll be halfway through your first stroke before they've even started going off the line. So it's important just to grab those little free bits of reaction time where you can.
I imagine the worst thing that could happen in that situation is that you've got a crew like an eight, for example, and if some of them aren't watching the light and some are, then you find the crew's dysfunctional before it even gets off the blocks.
Yeah, and it won't be it'll be like we had a bad start. It won't. No one will think, oh, some people are looking at the light, some people are listening for the sound. You know, I don't think I've ever heard a debrief where we talked about a bad start and said the coach said, oh, who was looking at the light, who was listening at the sound? You know, it just isn't done. But in my single, I'm always keen to take that advantage. I don't think I've ever tried to use it as a strategy in a crew boat. Maybe I just haven't thought of it, but why not? Why wouldn't you take that extra advantage?
Yeah, I think I'd add it to the pre-race warm-up routine. Don't forget to look at the light. No, good thinking. And even when they have starts where we are, like Barrington, if they have starts and it's rough so they don't use the starting pontoon, then the start boat still has – it's got a megaphone and it's got lights. And so you'll find most start positions have lights.
Yeah. And when Ken was saying before about you can't really get your blades deep enough on the start line for that first stroke, I think you can. You just – when you see that light change – you just go to bury your blades more deeply. You don't need to keep them buried. You just think, well, the first movement I'm doing as I push my legs is lifting my hands a little bit more, getting a bit more purchase on the water, and really try and bang those first strokes out really quickly, nice and clean, nice and quick. So, you know, for me, it's normally like half, three-quarter full, something like that. It doesn't matter too much, just as long as you get it done quickly. In a single, you can be a bit more quick than you can in an eight. In an eight, sometimes it pays to be make sure the crew's a bit more together. In a single, obviously, you can just wing it. You're the only person that has to get in time and just get your boat up to speed really quickly. It's a lot easier in a small boat than it is in an eight. It requires a lot more practice in an eight to get a good start than a single.
The last adage I'd like to mention is that sometimes I've heard the statement that the crew that takes the most strokes in the last 500 metres of a race wins. And you've got to do it well, of course, but if you can take the rating up, as Lachlan says, take the boat speed up and let the rating go with it, and if you can take it up to something that's really quite high in that last part of the race, you'll find you can get some pretty impressive speeds. The argument, of course, is that if you've got enough energy to do that, maybe you use too much earlier in the race. So each crew is a bit different, but work with them to understand these particular techniques we're talking about to make sure they get the best race experience they can.
Yeah, and I think with coxswains, some of the best coxswains I've had are probably ones that will tell you when you're starting to do something good. So say you're racing a whole heap of crews, say one crew's half a length in front of you, the coxswain can say, look, I'm at there. At their stern, take me to the coxswain or something like that. So you're basically giving the crew a little goal to achieve. Then when they achieve it, say, okay, I'm at their coxswain, now take me to their stroke seat. And so the coxswain is moving forward and compared to the other boats, and it's really good motivation. If a crew is pulling away from you, it works the opposite. So if the coxswain's saying how the other crew's moving away, we need to do something now, for example, that's I found that pretty much to be universally bad for boat speed. So if there's some sort of good morale thing that the coxswain can pick out of the race situation, then that's great. Maybe you've increased your speed, maybe you're catching up on another crew, stuff like that. If it's the opposite, so another crew's getting away, saying don't let them get away can sometimes work, but I think it's like a 50-50. It could mean like a crew can give up if they think that someone's moving away from them. So it's a really tricky art, coxing a boat, but it certainly has a huge impact on the rower's morale and how much power they're putting into the oars and how fast the boat moves. So if you enjoyed this episode, you might like to head over to our website. We have an email list you can sign up to and get free tips on rowing. Most of our our things that we send out are videos, short-ish videos, concise, covering one narrow topic, and we'll send them to you to your inbox if you sign up on our website with your email address. And our website's just decentrowing.com, and you can go from there. And until next time, happy rowing.